Hey, listeners, ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
It's Dr. Smith from Lost in Space.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh, you blithering bucket of boots.
Oh, William Earth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literally, a particularly good one today. The multi-talented Seth MacFarlane. How many times has he made you laugh? If you're anything like me, it's a lot. With Family Guy. Oh, that was my Stewie, by the way, in case you didn't know. Ted. Amazing. The Orville, of which I have done a fun little part on. And his amazing career as the modern day, you know, American canon traditional crooner. He's the busiest man in show business and one of the nicest and one of the funniest. This is a particularly good one. If this one doesn't bring a smile to your face, I give up the podcast business. You always have great hair, but yet you're wearing a hat. I know it's a podcast. I know that the listeners don't know, and I'm always very envious of your hedgehog-like virility on top of your skull.
Look who's talking.
How are you, man? Miss you.
I'm good. I'm amazed that you have time to do a podcast with everything you got going on. It just brings you joy, does it?
It does. It's super, super fun. And it's like when I get to talk to folks like you who I know and love, I just know that we're going to be talking about stuff that no one else is ever going to ask you or talk to you about. And then I get to fanboy around people, particularly in music. I've had, you know, when I had like Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac on, just went, you know, or because I'm like a huge yacht rock guy. You and I are very well suited because our musical taste would relegate us to the nerd corner of the American high school quad. I think it's safe to say, right?
Very, very much. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned yacht rock because they tweet me often because of a Family Guy episode that we did about, or that the folks now running the show did about yacht rock. Of course, I haven't written on the show in about 10 years.
Right.
At least, and everyone yet still assumes that every word that comes out of those characters' mouths was written by me. I had no idea what yacht rock was. So I get these tweets and I'm like, they're like, thanks, man. This is, we're psyched you're a fan. And
what was the bit?
It was a whole episode about Yacht Rock.
Oh, I have to go back and look.
Yeah, I'm a Yacht Rock. You're a musical theater. I mean, I think it's fair enough. I mean, I know it's more American standards.
Yeah, it's sort of a broad, definition of various kinds of jazz / orchestral music. It's more. Than,
are you scatting now?
Right now.
Are you gonna, not now, but are you going to be out there?
I always found scatting to be a little ridiculous, to be honest.
Thank you.
I never quite understood. I guess in serious jazz circles, it's considered a legitimate
endeavor.
Style. I never got it. It always just eluded me.
Well, you mentioned jazz, like singing, and I was like, what is jazz singing? And then I think it's scatting. Right?
It's interesting. I'm going to sound like I'm dating myself. The thing that separates jazz singing to me in general is that, if you listen to Sinatra or Peggy Lee or Dean Martin or Rosemary Clooney or Sammy Davis Jr., they sing the way they talk. There's a genuineness to their cadences and to their, they're not putting on, that sort of fake dialect that we all do. And whenever we sing a rock song or and it differs with every generation and every decade. I mean, like everybody sounded like Eddie Vedder in the 90s. Everybody sounded like David Bowie in the 80s. And, this kind of this style. But when you listen to those vocalists, they're kind of outside that. They speak and they sing, and both forms of communication are the same. They're not putting on any airs. There's an honesty to it.
Yeah. I got to see Sinatra sing once, and it was towards the end, but he was still, it was more presence. He was really leaning on the spoken phrasing.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much, but, and then later he smacked me. So that was really good.
Is that like, right?
When you have a Sinatra experience that ends with him smacking you,
you've had
the full Monty.
What were the circumstances that led up to him? Did you make a joke about his wife's hair?
I think his blood pressure might have been up because it was the weekend. The famous, are you familiar with Kitty Kelly, who is the famous?
Yeah. Yes.
It was the weekend that the Kitty Kelly book on Sinatra came out, and so
it was a long time ago.
This is 87, I want to say, and after this big black tie event where he sang. I was introduced to him and I was like, Mr. Sinatra, it's an honor to meet you. And he grabbed me by the face, like super hard, like with one hand, like give me like on my cheeks, like he would a baby, like, oh, that baby, like got me there. And then with the other hand, pop, pop, pop with his hand. And he says, my grandkids love you.
Oh yeah. So it was like a loving Italian slap.
It was a loving Italian slap. But
look at this guy.
Look at it. Oh, yeah, papa de me.
You're actually really hurt, but you don't want to let on.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he definitely, it was great because he giveth and he taketh away in the same breath. It was like, it was like, ow. But it was amazing. It was super fun.
That's a good memory.
Right? What is your favorite musical?
My favorite, I have different categories. My favorite.
Oh, this is good. See, I knew we would nerd out, deep dive on this shit. And like, listen, if you just want to hear me ask him to do the fucking voices, you can just turn it off right now. Cause we're going deep in the American canon. This is happening.
Yeah. Best, probably the best, musical score ever written for a musical to me is probably Carousel. For a musical, the best filmed musical, probably The Sound of Music.
Yes. Oh God.
And probably the best overall achievement in musical theater. Like how I can't believe they pulled this off structurally, top to bottom, music, lyrics, libretto, everything is probably My Fair Lady. Because George Bernard Shaw is Rodgers and Hammerstein struggled to turn Pygmalion into a musical, and it was just so hard because it was so intellectual as opposed to emotional.
Yep.
And Yearning Low found a way in. There's a story I read in his biography, in Alan J. Lerner's biography, where he was struggling to write that final number where Henry Higgins comes back, and Henry Higgins, no emotion in this guy that is shown anywhere. And he says, I have to write a love song that is not a love song. And at that moment, his wife came down the stairs and he said, you know, dear, you're actually really quite attractive. And she said, oh, thanks so much.
As they do.
And he said, what I mean is I've grown accustomed to you. I've grown accustomed to your face. Mm. And that's supposedly how that song came to be. So it's a really amazing achievement in theater, because it's, you know, so much of musical theater is so flowery and emotional and wears its heart on its sleeve. And that show can't, because it derives from Shaw. So they had to find a cynical way in, and it's pretty amazing achievement.
Amazing accomplishments like Hamilton notwithstanding. What's your take on the state of, like, are you a big fan that when you go to Broadway and you want to see a musical, it's going to be a version of a movie that you've seen 100 times already?
Yeah, I have not seen a Broadway show in a long time.
Well, that's just what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, it's, you want my honest opinion? To me,
yes.
In some forms of media, most notably film, to some degree film, certainly television. Let's look at television. If you take television, I think everyone would agree is better than it's ever been. Now, television is these shows that we remember fondly as great shows. You go back and watch them now, and it's a tough thing. It's tough to defend beyond like, hey, this is just comfort food. But television has just gone up and up and up and up and up, and has just gotten better and better and better and better as time has gone along. And I think the opposite has happened with music. I think it's been this weird inverse thing where it's they spend less and less and less money, you know, on the product itself. Again, not to sound like I'm like 50 years older than I am, but, you know, I hear old recordings. I'm like, wow, they had like a 50-piece orchestra for this thing instead of 2 guitarists, a drummer, a bass, you know, and a keyboardist. And, and that was Capitol and Columbia, they were doing that with everybody, and they were spending the money on the recordings, and not necessarily on the touring and the marketing and all that and all the stuff that they have to do now. But it was just an era of high musicality, and I think to my ear, that's deteriorated. It's tough for me to find a lot out there now that challenges my ear in the way that older music does, and the way, you know, the complexity and the richness and the variation of sound. It's tough. But television, on the other hand, strangely, the opposite. It's just never been better.
Which brings us to Orville. First of all, how is my character Terulio? Where is he in the world right now? What is he doing?
He's still alive. He's doing his own thing. Probably off spreading his pheromones around, whipping people into a frenzy.
So I was, I got a script one day for the Orville, and this is the pilot. It's the Orville pilot, or episode 1. So I don't know anything about it other than it's my man, Seth, who I always love helping, being around, doing anything. I'm always, as Lorne Michael says, he's a friend of the shows. and I read the part to Rulio, and the screen direction basically has the character ejaculating out of his forehead. And I was like, oh, I'm in. Like, I did not need to read anything more than a blue alien who ejaculates out of his forehead. I mean, my entire career was leading me to that moment, and I'm very proud of it. It was super fun, and you directed me, which is always great.
Yeah, look, man, when Daniel Day-Lewis said no, who's the next call?
My career is predicated on being second in line to the cobbler, as I like to call him. So the new trailer was released today.
What is today? Today is the...
We don't know what today will be, actually. Okay. So let's say this. So the new trailer, people love, how about this? People love the new trailer.
Mm-hmm. There you go. It's just taking the world by storm.
It is. It's up there with the new Top Gun trailers, which I'm obsessed with at Tom Cruise and trying to get him on the show. And every 6 months they dole out a new Top Gun trailer. That's kind of your, because you and Tom, you'd be a good Tom Cruise, by the way. Have you played him ever on Family Guy?
I have not. It's funny. I've met him. I've met him when I was doing the Graham Norton show in London.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Family Guy has made fun of him for years. You've never met a better sport. And just the nicest guy.
Yeah.
You know, just, quote, good fun, all good fun, end quote. Like, just
the best.
just a true sport. Like I'm already a fan of his movies, but I was delighted at how cool he was about everything. He's just a good guy.
Do you recall the circumstances that led to me cold calling you?
That's this goes way back.
It's right? Way deep. I can tell you, cause it's this, I like all people love Family Guy, and particularly in the years when it really was, I mean, you were writing it, producing it, doing the voice. I mean, we're doing it all.
Right. I still give a shit, I guess is what
you cared. It was before you got so rich that you stopped caring about anything with your name on it.
Before I retreated to my Tucker Carlson-esque reclusive lifestyle. And
that's right. Anyway, my kids and I love the show so much, and I'll never forget. I was in London doing Few Good Men on stage, and an episode came on, and Stewie, I believe, had gone to Hollywood. Anyway, Stewie was getting his makeup done, makeup and hair done, and the scene opened with Stewie going, "Please, please, just one more," and the makeup artist goes, "All right," and Stewie goes, "Rob Lowe." And he goes, "Straight." And so he goes, "No, I never would have thought so." It made me laugh so fucking hard. And I was like, I got to call these guys. And that's sort of how we met.
That's a damn fine Stewie.
It wasn't bad, was it?
Yeah, no. I'm looking for a way out, Rob. Listen, it's yours. Take over. Do it. Go on.
Oh, maybe I will.
Passing the torch.
Oh, now that I know it's a little higher like that.
That's a little like the old, I don't know who did that voice in the 50s and 60s, the old timey. But a little wheel.
Oh, no, what's, you know what it also
is? Mr. Flintstone.
It's Dr. Smith from Lost in Space.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Oh, you blithering bucket of boots.
Oh, William Earth. that was an amazing show when you think about it. Like, I look back with fond memories of that, and then you realize...
Well, wasn't it originally supposed to be about... who was it? Don West, and who was the other guy? It was supposed to be their show. And then it became Dr. Smith, the kid, and the robot.
That's an ego breaker. Have you ever seen...
Suddenly the Sid and Marty Krofft show.
Oh, dude. Okay. Well, we'll get there in a minute, now that you've opened up that wormhole. Have you ever seen the screen test?
For Lost in Space? No.
Yes.
Who's screen test? Dr. Smith's screen test?
No, that would be amazing, obviously. No, it's the handsome guy. Okay, guys, team, who's the handsome lead in Lost in Space? Not Don West is the young buck. Guy Williams.
Guy Williams, that's who it is. Yeah.
It's Guy Williams' screen. It's the absolute best thing you've ever seen in your life. Because he's lit in that 40s movie star light. And he's literally just turning his face around and being so handsome.
That's the audition.
It's just him being handsome. Really, it is.
Of how many auditions have you done where that was what got you the gig?
Well, there is that. And then they ask him to wear, I love that they're in velour in that show. They're like jammies.
I know.
Did you ever think of any of that when you were doing Orville? Was there any nods to Lost in Space? There should have been.
Velour and spandex just never entered the equation. It was like, look, particularly if I'm directing as well as performing, it was bad enough on Ted. I'm walking around in you know, looking like a Borg all day with all these wires and electronics and things that were attached to my clothes so they could record the movement data for the bear. But yeah, I kind of drew the line at like tight spacesuits. I'm going to be in it all day. Let's make it comfortable.
Why is it in space that everybody wore tight things? Is there a reason that in space things are tight?
Well, interesting question, Rob. I think there is a reason. Well, there's a reason that it all looks the way it does in Hollywood. There are things that you can predict and have people take seriously in the science fiction genre, like technology. Like spaceship design, like alien cultures. You know, there are things that you can create a narrative around, something that doesn't exist, and you can hypothesize that this is how it could be, and it's believable. For some reason, clothing design and music are damn near impossible. If you ever, like any, I mean, that's why if you watch a lot of, you know, the old Star Trek, a lot of the music they listen to, it's like, oh, it's Mozart. It's jazz. It's stuff that they figure, well, this is going to be timeless, so this is probably safe. Because when you listen to, quote-unquote, future music, it always sounds absurd.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous because it's so much harder to predict what's going to happen to a culture artistically than it is to predict what's going to happen to a culture technologically. I don't know why that is. That's a question for a philosopher or somebody smarter than me. And the same thing goes for casual wear. So a future military uniform is, you know, a pretty easy thing to guess at. But a future, like what are everyday people going to be wearing in the future? That was like the biggest challenge. Certainly when we were doing the Orville, and you always wind up with turtlenecks.
That's amazing.
Turtlenecks with stripes. That's what everyone wears in the future. God help us all.
When you were building the world, did you get into the world of alien civilizations and the Anunnakis and the Palladians and all of that? You know, I love reading about all of that. They're from Orion's Belt. Some of them are from Sirius. Yeah. Some of them are interdimensional and don't have to have a spaceship, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's the most fun job. For me, I had more fun with it than I ever did on, you know, doing comedy.
Really?
It's the most fun I've ever had as a writer. I loved it.
And designing the sets was, well, I remember on the sets that I was on, the bridge was nuts. I mean, and I feel like the bridge is... It's true. You would think in the future, there's no like levers or gizmos. You do it with your fucking mind and it's screens, if that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also the conceit that if you're traveling long distances on a spaceship in the future, it probably can't look like a submarine. It can't be this dark, dingy, oily, you know, hard sci-fi looking thing because you'd go crazy. You'd start to kill each other. For it to last long periods of time in that kind of environment, it's got to be comfortable. It's got to feel like you're in, you know, the Four Seasons in Manhattan, or you know, on the set of Dynasty, and that was kind of the thinking. Our production designer looked at luxury yacht design when he was designing that bridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny you say that. That's so funny because I got to visit a very fancy yacht this summer. With these state-of-the-art stuff, and I thought, oh, it's the Orville.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of where the aesthetic conceit came from. It just seemed like, what's an isolated mobile environment that you can stay in for long periods of time and not go stir crazy? And you know, a yacht is, if not at the top of that list, it's pretty close.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at macys.com/purpose. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crew neck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
The next show that you create, could you, since you, that's a genre that is exists, there's Star Trek, there's Star Wars, there's all that stuff. Could you go into the genre of kids Saturday morning musicals a la Sid and Marty Krofft? Can I get a Sigmund and the Sea Monsters out of you? Can I get a Lidsville and H.R. Puffin stuff? Is there any?
You think there's still a market for that? Because it's funny. We've talked about that in our production offices that. You know, a Saturday morning block of some kind. And in our case, it was cartoons. Mm-hmm. You know, Saturday morning block on a network. You know, is that still, because that was such a big deal.
Oh, such a big deal. Look, we had to wake up to something. And yeah. Now those kids wake up to 7,000 different things. And I just think that, probably.
Oh, it was an event. It was an event.
If you didn't have your cereal in front of you for the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, you were slacking.
If you didn't have your Gremlins cereal while you were watching Rubik the Amazing Cube, yeah.
Were you a big fan of Sid and Marty Krofft live action?
Sid and Marty Krofft was slightly before, like, I was a little too late
for that.
Arriving on this planet.
If you're young, you're significantly younger than I am. That was right in my wheelhouse.
I mean, I subsequently have gotten a full education. You know, Lidsville. Do you remember Lidsville?
Do I remember?
Yeah. The one about the hats.
Everybody, there was a hat. Everybody knows where it's at in the land of hats. That's Lidsville. Liddyville. Not to be confused with Nitty Grittyville, the land of living cats. That's Lidsville. Thank you.
Wow. Oh, that's, I remember a different theme, but that's.
Well, that's the end theme.
Oh, that's the end theme.
At the end title. Would you like the opening?
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
That's harder. I don't know that one because it's full of my aversion to exposition carries over into my ability to remember main titles, and it's all expositions. He went to the park that day, and as he then he fell into the hat. He began to fall and fall and fall and fall and right.
People are gonna get so high into this podcast because it. Get a chance to go there, you'll be glad you did.
Cause everybody that goes to Lidsville really flips. There's that voice again.
Charles Nelson Reilly.
By the way, Lidsville. We understand that reference, right?
I mean, is there something more than hats?
Yes, sir.
Not the brightest guy, Rob.
Well, you also didn't know the Beatles reference in Orville that I explained to you.
Helped
Admiral Halsey.
I did not know that. I'm not a huge Beatlehead. I enjoy the Beatles. I'm not like a, you know, one of my writing partners who co-wrote Ted with me is a big Beatlehead, and we have the same sort of conflict. I appreciate them. I like them. Admiral Halsey escaped me. I didn't know what it was.
Admiral Halsey. And I think I had to say it.
Yeah.
And I was like, Admiral Halsey, Sister Susan, Uncle John, Martin Luther, Phil and Don. Are we letting them all in? Is Admiral Halsey coming up to the third deck, too?
I like the Billy Joel song, I guess.
It is very similar. So Lidsville.
Yep.
A lid was a certain amount of drugs. I'm going to buy a lid. Give me a lid. Buy like a lid, maybe.
Wow. That seems like an inescapable parallel.
How about this? Do you know what H.R. Puffin stuff is?
H.R. McMaster. That probably wouldn't be a...
Happy, relaxing... puffing stuff.
I'm seeing a pattern here starting to
form. Isn't that interesting? The pattern that we're starting to see here.
Relaxing puffing stuff.
Wonder what that is.
Has anyone ever asked Sid and or Marty about in interviews about these parallels? And
Well, I asked him in person, and he confirmed it was happy, relaxing, puffing stuff. And I think, and I don't want to get out over my skis on this, but I believe there was a story where he would just confirm that, you know, that time, what people were doing in the writer's room.
I don't want to get out over my skis.
That was a good one, right?
Is that yours, or is that like a general? I just arrived on this planet, so I don't fucking know.
I as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, I've never said this phrase before. People say it all the time. It's so funny that you busted me. It's so funny that you busted me on it.
Maybe I'm hanging out with a less classy crowd. I've never heard the phrase, I'm getting out over my skis.
It's always high finance people that say it. In my experience, he was a little heavy in the commodities, got a little over his skis, and that was that. So that's kind of the...
Over his skis. Now, out here, they're too busy talking about unpacking things. And
oh, yeah. There's a lot to unpack in. I
heard that phrase like maybe 7 years ago, maybe six, seven years ago for the first time. I'd never heard it before. And then suddenly everybody was using it in every conversation that I was having.
How does that happen?
I think just because people suck.
People do suck.
They're just a bunch of parrots.
And then the notes that you get, the phraseology then cycles and it's gone. Like, I don't hear anymore. I'm just worried about protecting the character.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the show and on the executive. Flawed characters. I've worked with executives and known people who've worked with executives who really have this problem where any kind of a flawed character makes them squeamish. There was a show I produced called The Winner for Fox that was written by Ricky Blitt, who was a hysterically funny writer. And it was basically about a guy who was 40 years old, still living with his parents.
Amazing.
And there was such reservation, I think, among the network about, you know, this guy is such a loser. No, is anybody going to go for that? As if, like, we're all a bunch of winners in America. Every one of us. Yeah. We're all a bunch of winners. Who's going to be able to relate to this?
Yes, sir, it's right. Yeah, exactly.
And so he put a line in the script that said, Glenn is a winner. He just doesn't know it yet. In the stage directions. And that was what was the turning point.
An amazing story, by the way. I believe that with every fiber in my being. We have no further notes. Problem solved.
A little distressing.
You got out of your skis on that one.
Are all your podcasts like this, Rob?
Yes. If you were, and you were a great Oscar host, by the way.
Rob, I am. By the time I walked out onto that stage, I had already had about 3.5 glasses of straight scotch. There was no way I was going out and doing that sober. There was just no way.
Come on.
Weird to God. I had to dance. All this stuff. They're like, no way. I'll have an anxiety attack. I can't do this.
So you mean to tell me this is like, was it Spaceman Bill Lee threw a perfect game for the Boston Red Sox on acid? You're telling me that you went out lit and hosted the Academy Awards?
Yes, sir. On my mother's grave. That is the truth. I bet it's more common than you think, though.
Maybe it is. As I'm starting to go through the people who've hosted, I'm like, they checked that box. Mm-hmm. Yep. Ooh, yeah, they could definitely have been lit.
Because I'm not a professional stand-up who does this all the time.
Right.
So, you know, if you're Chris Rock and you're out there and you do it 24/7, you know, you're going to have those mental tools at your disposal when you need them. When you're, you know, you only do it sporadically. Alcohol opens those doors when you need them.
Do you have a memory of it?
I do remember hosting the Oscars. Wouldn't that be something? I do. It was a blast start to finish. I would have gone back and done it the next year. They called me when I was in Santa Fe shooting the Western to come back and shoot the following year. It was the same producers to come back and do the show again. And I debated it. I talked to some friends and I realized the only reason that I would be saying yes would be to just kind of thumb my nose at the detractors. And I'm like, you know what? That's not a good enough reason to put in all this work. Like, you don't do a show out of spite. So
you don't.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So I was a little sad because I loved working with those guys, but I just, it's a
lot of work. People don't realize the amount of work it is. And they also don't realize you don't get paid particularly.
No,
it's fine. But I mean, I'm just saying only because it is a lot of work.
Yeah. But it's fun. I mean, I remember like the audience was great. Like the room was fantastic. And you know, I've done some stand up. I haven't done a lot, but when I was younger, I did enough of it to kind of know when the room's with you and when they're not. And this room was just a gift. I mean, they were just fantastic.
Well, I don't think that happens all the time. You know what? Oh, actually, no, it is. Because at the beginning, everybody's a winner. So everybody in that room is about to win an Academy Award. Every fucking person is going to win an award, Andy. You could not be happier. Try doing that same monologue an hour later, pal.
Suddenly Bradley Cooper ain't laughing so much.
No. He's no.
I kid Bradley. I love him.
He's the best.
Looking for a sparkling clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling clean shower and tub without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to effortless clean.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.
Who was the worst sport in your Family Guy trashing of absolutely everybody in Hollywood? For every Rob Lowe and Tom Cruise, there was
Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody.
There was a gag, admittedly a very mean gag, where I guess it was in our Agatha Christie episode, and they find the killer, who turns out to be Tom Tucker, the newsman. And he says, he punches the cop who catches him, which is Joe Swanson. And he says, just for that, when the movie of this story comes out, I'm going to make sure Adrian Brody plays you. And then Tom Tucker goes, oh, I guess that means you don't want anyone to see it. And it was admittedly I had just seen the movie Splice. I ran into a party and I'd just seen the movie Splice, and I thought it was great. And I thought he was great. I think he's a terrific actor. That's the irony of this. I actually am a fan. And I said, hey, you know, sorry about this. Sorry about that gag we did. I hope there's no hard feelings. It was very clear that there were maybe some hard feelings.
It was frosty. He was frosty.
A little bit frosty, but that's a gentle, you know, I can't think of anything worse than that. And again, I felt a little badly because I am a fan of his work. So it's
just makes me laugh. The people that don't, that have a thin skin about that stuff.
I would still work with Adrian Brody any day of the week. I think he's fabulous.
He's fine. He's great. He's great as Pat Riley in this Lakers series.
Good, talented guy.
Tell me, this is like the worst interviewer question. It's when they clearly haven't done their homework. They'll say this. Tell me about the new album. But that said, tell me about the new album.
Is it out? I keep being told that it's going to come out, and
who's controlling that? You'd think.
Oh, there's some kind of weird thing with this kind of stuff where it's like there's specific dates that are like, if it were up to me, it'd be like, great, we're done. Get it out there.
So is it, this is fascinating. So is there a George Martin-esque producer in your life? Like, I don't think we've quite got it yet.
A fiscal quarterly marketing review papers, whatever the hell it is.
Those people.
Yeah, yeah.
They're preventing your art from being.
It's something to do with vinyl. Like apparently it takes about 2.5 years to press one record in vinyl.
What?
So.
Yes. Did they get out over their skis on it?
Anyway, the point being, yes, the album is coming out, I believe soon. I guess it's May 20th now. So fingers crossed that actually happens.
Is it American Standards? What is it? You're not scatting. We know that.
Well, not scatting. No. We recorded this at Abbey Road.
No way. You know who recorded at Abbey Road? I know you're not really familiar with them.
Beatles might have recorded.
Yes, they did there.
But the place is interesting because it's very, it looks like nothing has been changed. I'm told it's superstitious that the carpeting, the walls, there's a lot of stuff that just looks like if you were living in that house, you'd say it's time to repaint these walls. It's time to change this carpet. But there's a kind of a feeling that everything somehow contributes to the exact sound of those rooms. And they're just very uneasy about fucking with it. But yeah, we recorded with, I think it was about a 50 piece orchestra. Arrangements by Andrew Cotty, produced by Joel McNeely, my longtime friend and composer. It's up-tempo swing. It's kind of speaks for itself. There's one original on there, but they're all old standard. Most of them are standards that maybe are less familiar that will hopefully be new to people who are not deep divers.
You've recorded, I'm assuming, in the Capitol Records building where Sinatra did a lot of stuff, right?
Yep, we recorded there too.
And what's like when you go into those rooms, do you, other than the vibe, do you go, oh yeah, no, that's a very specific sound. I get it.
Yeah. Where I notice that more now, just because I do a lot more of it, is scoring sessions. For a show like the Orville, for example, we use anywhere from 85 to a 90 piece orchestra every episode. And you start to get a sense of like, okay, this soundstage sounds like this and this soundstage sounds like that. So I'm at the point where there are certain stages that are really, you know, Newman stage at Fox has a great sound. Sony, to my ear, the Sony stage, this is going to be so dull to everyone listening. But
No, it's fascinating.
The Sony stage, to me, is the one that if I'm, you know, scoring a film, that's kind of ideally where I want to be.
What about it are you hearing there that you're not hearing somewhere else?
It's like just enough wetness. Not just enough natural reverb that it sounds, you know, because too much reverb obviously sounds like a, you know, 1967 recording where like everyone is singing in the middle of the Grand Canyon.
And then there's not enough of it, which is Springsteen has a great quote. He goes, all those pop songs done in the 70s, they make my skin crawl.
Because they're so dry?
Because they're so dry.
Yeah.
It's like you can hear, like you can literally hear a sonic blanket.
I didn't realize that was a sonic, that was an audio trait of 70s recording.
Dude, oh my God. You really hear it on the drums, when the drums sound like people are banging on pillows. You know what's really is in the Partridge Family albums, because that was what I was listening to when I was a kid. Go back and listen to, you know, point me in the direction of Albuquerque.
You're asking me to go back and listen to the Partridge Family?
I am. How did you not listen? As a young man, actor, wanting to come into this, were you not a David Cassidy? He was singing, dancing, handsome, just like you.
I had a weird like thing when I was a kid when those reruns would come on. Like the Brady Bunch was like, I'm there, I'm in, day or night. If it's on, I'm watching. And then like the Partridge Family would come on and I'd be like, oh, this is a drag. It'd be like when MASH came on, be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna do something else.
I'm with you on the MASH thing.
I don't know what the difference was. Like I was there for the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family just put me to sleep.
God, really? Those fluted microphones they sang into and the...
No, I haven't seen it in adulthood. I may go, you know, if I go back and watch it, I may find that I love it.
Hal Blaine, all those guys, like, you know, the Wrecking Crew, all playing on those. I mean, I think you need to revisit that.
Just said like a doctor prescribing more exercise. I really think you need to get out there and do some Cassidy's every morning.
Five Cassidy's, three Shirley Joneses, and then make sure you finish with Bonaducci's. Seven Danny Bonaducci's. This is great. We got to figure out when we can see each other. Are you still living in LA?
I am. I haven't left. I've been working here since before the pandemic. I think I've been on one trip.
Jesus. Are you ever on the Fox lot? Or you're done? You've wrapped. Orville's wrapped, right?
Yeah, well, Post is there. So I'm there all the time, actually.
All right, Seth. I love you, man. This was so fun.
All right, Rob. Anytime.
All right, brother.
All right, take it easy.
Oh, Seth MacFarlane. Oh. We really got out of our skis on that one. I felt really out over my skis on that, particularly talking about Lidsville with Seth MacFarlane. So much to unpack. There's a lot of stuff. By the way, if any of those references are unfamiliar to you, I implore you to look them up. Maybe the guy Williams, Lost in Space, Screen Test, the Lidsville theme where they... say Liddy, Liddy, Liddyville, not to be confused with Nitty Grittyville. Anyway, this is what happens when I get around my buddy Seth MacFarlane. Crazy stuff that is probably interesting only to he and I. But you never know. Hopefully you liked it. I hope you did. I see the light is flashing on the answering machine here in the studio that is the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob. This is Kristen calling from Vail, Colorado. Know you're a big skier. Come out and ski with us next season. Hey, Tommy Boy is my favorite comedy of all time. I literally watch it every time it's on television, and that was the case last night. Of course, you're hilarious in that, and I was Googling some information about the movie as I was watching it, and on Wikipedia, they actually note that you are uncredited in that movie. I'd never seen that before, and I just don't know what that means. Could you explain that situation a little bit and what that means for all of us? Thanks.
Well, thanks for calling, and I will take you up on that offer. I love skiing at Vail. Side note, I did a movie called Youngblood, the bad... coach who teaches me how to fight in Youngblood, a man named Eric Nestorenko, leading penalty minutes of the Chicago Blackhawks, notoriously mean as a snake on the ice.
was for many years a ski instructor at Vail and may still be. So I would come to Vail and ski with Mr. Eric Nestorenko. Yes, me being uncredited in Tommy Boy. First of all, I'm wearing a Chris Farley t-shirt today as we're recording this. Kismet. It's the universe talking. So here's what happened. Tommy Boy was originally Lorne Michaels' idea. We were playing tennis, and Lorne says, I have an idea for a movie. You and Farley would be brothers. It's a funny idea. 6 months goes by. Nobody says anything. I figure it just was a passing thing. Then all of a sudden, the Turners, who wrote Wayne's World, along with Mike Myers, deliver a script, and it's slightly different, as you know. But still, you know, it's a brother thing with me and Farley, although we're not really brothers, whatever. And so they go to make my deal, and I think Chris and David had never done a movie, I think, at that point. David Spade and Chris Farley. I'd obviously done a bunch of movies. And they wanted to bill me third. I didn't feel like that was fair. But I also knew that they were effectively the stars of the movie. So we couldn't really agree on the billing. So I just said, you know what, just don't bill me. I don't need any billing in this. So that's why I have no billing. And it just goes to show you that billing doesn't mean anything. Because everybody remembers I'm in it and it's all good in the hood. A good catch, by the way. And not a lot of people notice that. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out Parks and Recollection, my other podcast with Alan Yang, where we watch every Parks and Rec episode and tell you what was really going on. And 5-star reviews. You can be your own best critic. And I will see you next week on Literally.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced and engineered by me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Our researcher is Alyssa Grawl. Our talent bookers are Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. And music is by Devin Bryant. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Literally with Rob Lowe.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.